My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure, and it really is a pleasure, to talk to Greg Bear. Greg, welcome to KBOO and welcome to Portland.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
The title of your latest book is Mariposa. It's a Spanish word for butterfly, is
that right?
Exactly. And it's published by Vanguard Press. You've been writing for at least 20 years now, is that?
Oh, I sold my first story in 1966.
Is that right? To whom?
To Famous Science Fiction, a small little magazine. And didn't sell another story for 5 years thereafter. But I've been writing regularly since 1973.
You must be very tired.
I am.
Yeah. The first time I noticed you was a book called Blood Music, which I think is one of the best science fiction books. You have no problem with the term science fiction,
not
right?
At all. No,
okay.
I love it.
Because you've won the Hugo and Nebula Awards, and you can't really diss the term science fiction if you're going
to
accept those
I've
awards.
I've always accepted it. So.
Yeah, that's good. And you've been nominated several times and won a few times, right?
Yeah. Five for Nebulas and two for Hugos.
That's really good.
Yes.
You also, we were talking before we started recording, I see you around the same time as William Gibson and Neal Stephenson, but Neal really came a few years later.
Yeah, Gibson and I came out of the 70s along with John Varley and a few others, and Neal came along in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You never considered yourself, I hate to use the term, a cyberpunk, right?
I was accused of being a cyberpunk, and I kind of resented it until I realized, hey, these guys are getting a lot of press. And then I thought, how do I fit in better?
Yeah, that's
Bruce,
right.
Bruce had brought me, and Bruce Sterling had brought me, and the chairman of the whole movement, and Bruce and I still have a great time together.
Well, the thing that I've noticed, and I'm not accusing you of being a trendy here, is that of all the science fiction I've read lately, and this includes good TV work and even good movie work, the dystopian future has collapsed down to a corporate America, an America which is run solely for the benefit of and by corporations, either actively or behind the scenes.
That's been going on for at least 30 years now.
At least.
We can find it in films back into the 1970s and earlier. Actually, The President's Analyst starts off with
the phone company.
Ma Bell running everything.
TPC, the phone company.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you see that? Is this a future that you fear or that you actually think might be in our offing?
I think it already is here. Corporations have huge political power. I don't regard them as any better or worse than regular government. But again, they're not necessarily within our control. We can't vote them out except by driving them bankrupt. But that's something they do themselves.
We not only can't we vote them out, but we can't even try them for crimes because they're so politically connected.
Well, if they consider themselves individuals for the rights of free speech purposes, then why can't we try them for crimes on that basis? Sometimes you take a legal stance and maybe it's not where you want to be on the next stage.
Mariposa is actually the second book. Quantico was the first book. So I came into this as my Yiddish-speaking grandmother would say, mitten drinnen, in the middle of everything.
Oh, yeah. In medias res.
In medias res, as my Latin grandmother would have said, yes. Set this up for us. Set up Mariposa. What's happened in Quantico that we pick up on in Mariposa?
Well, in Quantico, we have four FBI students, three FBI students and one FBI woman who's been there for decades. And the students are caught in their first big case. And it turns out to be a very, very devious case involving the American anthrax killer. A series of proposed terrorist events which turn out to be turned on their ear as to who actually is causing them. And I won't reveal anything more about Quantico than that. But the trauma of all of this, ending up on an international stage, is sufficient to propel Rebecca Rose into going into furlough from the FBI in Mariposa. And she's hoping to put a family together. And then it's pulled back in. You're pulled back into it. She can't leave. It turns out she's working with the same team again, but in different situations in a totally different environment. Book starts with the vice president murdering his wife for no known reason. Moves on to FBI agent undercover in Texas, almost as if he's working in a foreign government, in Talos Corporation, a huge government services, military services training company. And we end up then, and Rebecca is kind of doing freelance work at a COPES conference for professional security types and also private security. And we follow that conference into the future as we look at all the wares they're selling and all the surveillance and all of the self-protection and that sort of thing.
Well, let's talk about a few people. There's William Griffin and Alicia Kunstler. These are still active FBI agents,
yes,
right? Although the FBI is not the FBI that we know and sometimes
in
love
Quantico,
now.
Quantico, after many years of a conservative administration, the FBI has kind of had its plug pulled by the new administration and is regrouping. They were hoping to ship them out of Virginia completely and maybe move them to the West Coast, to Alameda, as hinted. But that seems to be, in a time of deep economic difficulties, in a time of real problems, not working out quite as they had thought. So it looks like the FBI may, in fact, reconstitute in Virginia in a new form. I was quite pleased to find out that the FBI had backed away from torture. Quite a surprise in a lot of ways. They actually played the honorable card here, and that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, since the death of J. Edgar Hoover, things have been improving slowly, if not steadily.
Sometimes in leaps and bounds, too.
Well, okay. I mean, we can talk about that, but people of my age remember the FBI when it was a tool of thuggery, and it destroyed people's lives just because it could.
Yeah. And to some extent, that can still happen.
Oh, it
if
does.
You take a look
yeah.
at the Atlanta City bombing suspect.
That poor guy.
And it could still happen. But the fact is that crime and law enforcement are not easy to do. It involves a certain attitude. Sometimes the attitude of a sheep-killing dog. You know, to use the old Midwestern analogy, and you can sink your teeth into it, and you have to go after it because you're protecting the community. And yet at the same time, if you don't mind your P's and Q's and get your facts straight, and if you haven't burned out, which sometimes happens with law enforcement, if you burn out, you're a danger.
Yeah, there's also the, again, this is kind of parenthetical, tangential, but the failure of the FBI crime lab to turn out real forensic responses to evidence.
Again, overwork, too much self-confidence, and too little science.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, fingerprint science is kind of under examination, which is huge. At some point, I think DNA identifications may come under scrutiny. Based on false theorizing.
Are.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's always damaging because you spend your entire life putting these cases together, and you got to imagine it's like building houses all over town and they start falling apart. Yeah. And it's just very discouraging from a personal point of view.
Yeah, it's even fingerprints have come under charges of being not the cut and dried science it's supposed to be.
Well, the fingerprint analysis. Actually. Fingerprints are still pretty good, but you've got to, you know, find complete fingerprints and analyze them properly. And there's been a little fudging there. You know, again, these people are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And the one problem we have with any powerful institution is it's run by human beings. If it were run by angels, that'd be great.
Not too many of them dancing on heads of pins these days. No. You're writing thrillers here. And when you write a thriller, that means it's kind of plot heavy. And if I dance too much on the thin ice of your plot, please let me know, okay?
Well, up to your readers here. They want to shut their ears and go, no.
No. Hey. There's a man named Nathaniel Trace. Yeah. Interesting guy. You never know whether to like him. Through the whole book, right to the very last page of the book, you never know whether you like this guy or not. Yeah. And he's connected with something called Mariposa. Can you talk about Mariposa? Would you rather not?
Well, Nathaniel works for a corporation, a small corporation, that developed something which in later books, in a series based on Queen of Angels onward from my writings back in the 1980s, this book slides into that very slowly. He's creating the next stage of computational systems, which they call computors, which will eventually be called thinkers. And these machines are very, very good at analyzing complex systems and data and finding patterns. So they're pattern-seeking mechanisms. And this company is basically commissioned by the Talos Corporation to help back into and break down a financial watchdog being created in Geneva by the international community to watch over the assets and so on of the United States, which is deeply in debt.
Mm-hmm.
And well, right now, of course, we are deeply in debt. We owe our soul to the company store, and the company store is Singapore, China Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Yep.
So that's our security weakness, and what he wants to do is exploit that. And so he uses Nathaniel Trace and his computer colleagues to start working in this back door.
Let's talk a little bit more about the status of the United States in this future. How long would you say? Do you say the second decade of the 21st century?
Pretty close, yeah. And umpty up years down the road. Mm-hmm. Quantico was something on the order of 2012 or whatever.
Okay. Well, and everything gets destroyed anyway, so.
yeah, the Mayans
no, I don't believe
are to blame
that.
For yeah, everything.
The Mayans just said it rolls over like an odometer. They, you know, the calendar starts again at zero.
Yeah.
the country's falling apart, literally. Texas is on the verge of secession. I say hooray, let him go, but that's just my point of view.
Yeah, I wanted the governor to wait until November before he said that.
Yeah.
He jumped the gun.
Yeah, well, that's what they jump the gun in Texas a lot. Isn't it? Go off half-cocked, you know, all that kind of stuff, all those gun metaphors. What's the status of the United States? What's it like? What's going on? The president of the United States is... been injured in an attack,
an assassination attempt,
and
from 4 miles away using new technology,
new technology,
but not unheralded technology.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. The drone thing that's going on. Yeah, what is there a United States anymore?
Oh yeah, yeah, and there always has been a kind of a ruggedly individualistic United States. And in Queen of Angels, I had Green Idaho, where a lot of the right wing super individualists end up. Staying away, you know, and basically they formed their own semi-state.
Well, that wasn't too much of a leap, was
it? No, no. And it turns out that the politics that I was writing about in Quantico, which talked about starting in 2004, published in 2005, that I was talking about a major economic downturn because we weren't paying our bills. You know, we had an unfunded war. We had all this other stuff. It was just perfectly obvious from a strictly nonpartisan point of view that we were going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came down the pike and happened, it wasn't a surprise, but still I wish I'd done my investment planning based upon my science fiction precog abilities. I didn't.
Yeah,
you know, you got to kind of remain hopeful. In Mariposa, we're pulling out of that economic downturn in part because of going green, in part because we're not using as much gasoline and oil. But on the other hand, this causes economic and political repercussions elsewhere in the world. With countries that were getting wealthy off of us and now are looking at a future where they may not have us as customers anymore. So they want to maximize their political input, maximize their strategic balance now. Get ready for the time when they won't have oil revenues like they have today.
What's Deserta Arabia?
Well, Arabia Deserta is the new name for Saudi Arabia after a revolution which occurs around the time of Quantico. And so the prince in exile would be the current Saudi family,
mm-hmm.
members of that, a member of that family. There are Wahhabis, of course, who
naturally.
Are quite extremist and have been ever since, you know, their origins. They used to be regarded by other Arabs as extremists. The Muslim world is fascinating because there's all these different divisions. So you read Richard F. Burton writing about travels to Medina and Mecca, and he talks about the prejudice against the Shiites. On the Hajj, on the pilgrimage to Mecca, and they just don't like that. So they put them off to one side, mistreat them, kick them around. Persians, Iranians, they're not as popular. The desert tribes hate the Persian tribes, and vice versa. And it's still true.
Yep.
We think of Islamic world. Certainly, a lot of us on the paranoid conspiracy side believe the whole Islamic world is united against us, and that's simply not true. It's about as silly as saying that the entire Christian world is united and always has been. That's pretty silly, too.
Mm-hmm. Also, the Maghreb, the North African Arabs, are much different and are looked down upon as second raters by the Egyptians and the Syrians.
Yeah,
Egyptians
have always had attitude problems, which show up in some of the snide comments you hear here.
Yes.
They misinterpret Fuad al-Husam as being an Egyptian, but of course he says he's not.
We'll talk about Fuad in a moment. I'd like to remind our listeners I'm speaking with Greg Baer. His name is spelled just like the critter, B-E-A-R. The title of the book is Mariposa, and it's published by Vanguard Press. There's a lot of really interesting conceptual things going on in the book that are classic science fiction. Synthobes. I read about, I don't know if there's such a thing now, but I found it utterly fascinating. Tell us about synthobes.
Well, right now we're working on synthetic biology. Mm-hmm. When I wrote Blood Music, I conceived of cellular organisms, including their DNA, as being like computational systems. So you can actually store information on the DNA above and beyond what they were storing. But also DNA would interact with other DNA on at least some sort of rational, interactive basis. Computational is the idea I had back then. Turns out it's not so much computational or number-oriented as like a social system, a social network. And that's how DNA operates. So I was half right. Nowadays, if you're working with synthetic biology, you're creating organisms from nothing. And you can use them to do all sorts of stuff they weren't intended to do originally. And so in this case, they're being used to gather and store information that he steals off of the Talos company servers. But he can't take out because the surveillance is so intense within the Texas city that houses Talos Corporation, Lion City, Texas.
Everybody's chipped like somebody's pet now, right?
Yeah. Well, in the FBI, a lot of people carry their chips so that their weapons won't fire in the hands of miscreants. If you get your weapon stolen, it won't fire because the weapon doesn't recognize it.
That technology exists now.
It does now, yes.
Yeah.
And so some of the agents carry them on their belts. It's skin current transmission of data. Others just have themselves chipped under the flesh. It's more macho, so most of the guys have skin inserted chips.
Yeah, there's data tattoos.
Are used for a number of purposes, most of all for kind of amusement at this exhibition center, where your tattoo carries your personal information, and you can pass it across someone else's tattoo, and it transfers information. And it goes on just like a tattoo, but a slightly thick one. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the plot of the story.
Fuad. Fuad is he's a mole.
He is in the FBI. He's remained in the FBI since Quantico. Had a heavy-duty role in Quantico. And he realized that while he's heroic, he's got a lot of internal problems to deal with, but they're very quiet because he's a very, not necessarily entirely self-observing individual. Also, his status as a Muslim, he's a loyal Muslim. He eats, orthodox.
Halal food.
Halal food, and tries to follow that pattern, but he's living in Texas where there's barbecue everywhere. And in fact, there's a lot of Muslims in Texas who have to deal with this. And when they're bringing the prince in exile into town, they have to shut those barbecue signs off so he won't be offended.
I knew a vegetarian in Texas who had to eat barbecue twice a year to maintain his vegetarian status. otherwise, it goes strictly out of his mind, just walking past those great barbecue
joints. The best barbecue
in the world.
You can't have it.
Yeah, I know. You might get an argument from somebody from Kansas City, but not from me. What's MSARC? At least that's the way I would pronounce it if I were back in D.C.
Right. It's Mutual Strategic Asset Recovery and Control.
What's that?
And it's set up by the world that's loaning money to the United States and to other countries. So it's a giant financial analyst system, day-to-day, minute-to-minute, and second-to-second. And if they feel that the trends are down, they will pull their loans because they've had that bad experience of countries not paying off. Certainly, we've had that with many third-world countries. Now it looks like the United States might go into bankruptcy at any moment. So at this moment, we have our State Department and our president kind of bowing and scraping in front of the Chinese to hope that they keep their loans going, which I saw coming when I was writing this book over the last year and a half.
Us saw it during the Reagan administration when he financed an 8-year party for his rich friends, cut their taxes, and then handed us the bill.
Well, that often happens. But the funny thing is that during that administration, we were deeply in debt and the Dow was down. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly the conservatives get very, very wealthy during the Clinton administration, and they find many, many excuses to why that happened. During the Bush administration, the Dow was flat for many years, and then we ended up with very bad times, which everyone got hurt badly. It's interesting for my conservative friends to listen to them try to explain all of this, and they have many different theories, but mm-hmm. I think it's pretty simple. I think that business does well under Democratic administrations and not so well under Republican administrations. But boy, if you're wealthy, you can get wealthier. And that might be the whole point.
Yeah, the other thing, of course, is that every few years they come up with another idea for looting the Treasury, whether it's the savings and loan thing or whether it's the collateralized mortgages or whatever it is. Are we off topic just a bit?
No,
that really feeds into what this book is all about.
That's what the whole book is about. Is the interplay between conservatism and liberalism in America is fascinating. And I was trying to think of a metaphor. We need an opposition party, whoever's in power.
Can't fly with two wings. With one wing, you need a left wing and a right wing.
And you need someone, and every idea, even the good ideas, have to have opposition, sometimes virulent opposition, mm-hmm. simply to keep you honest. And we need that interplay between two sets of crazy people. Well, in between, what I'm doing in my books is I write about characters on both sides, and they have to be honest to themselves. So my FBI agents tend to be conservative. Others, not so much so. Nathaniel, we don't know by the time we first meet him because he's undergone Mariposa, which is almost a Jekyll Hyde kind of process. You just don't know what's going to come out of it. And so all the characters have to be their own politics, but also I regard politics as biology. Mm-hmm. And when you have a biological system, an ecosystem, there's a lot of pain and suffering going on, and same in politics.
When you mentioned Mariposa, Price says, excuse me, Pace says...
Axel Price.
Yeah. No. I'm talking about Nathaniel Trace. I'm sorry, I'm mixing up your characters. He has what he calls bee vision.
Yeah.
He sees like a bumblebee, or what he assumes a bumblebee would see like.
What's happened here is that all the learning curves for your genetic material that you learn from infancy are sort of removed. All the stops on the organ are removed under Mariposa. PTSD is a process of acquiring bad learning under tight circumstances that teaches you to be very reflexive under extraordinary tension and stress. And in normal life, if that keeps running on, it's like you're rumbling over a rough road all the time. Mm-hmm. And so that's what PTSD is. It's a bend in the biology of not just your mind, but your genetics. Mariposa takes that off. And it's interesting that comes out of, for the Mariposa treatment, research in cancer, where cancer is a bad learned response sometimes from too much stress, carcinogens, bad chemicals, alcohol, tobacco, everything else. Sometimes stress causes cancer or contributes to it, and you certainly respond poorly. Your immune system responds poorly to stress, too. So there's all these angles going on, which Mariposa kind of wipes free. So you are now almost a tabula rasa, almost like a newborn baby, psychologically as well as physically. And if it goes wrong, that's what's going on, is you've also removed your social conditioning, and you've removed some of the outside imposed limitations upon your abilities, which is an idea I think a lot of conservatives really feel. You know, they're holding me back. Mm-hmm. What would happen if you were, in fact, Mr. Hyde, and no longer really cared what they thought about you, and you were brilliant? What would you do with it? And that's what Nathaniel has to decide. And so, in a sense, he decides, just for theoretical purposes, since he was doing bad before, working for the bad corporation, then maybe he'll try to do good now, but he's not sure he can. He's not sure he even knows the difference.
He has a remarkable conglomeration of traits, including naivete, even about his own condition, and a vengeful thing going on underneath it, just barely beneath the surface.
Well, you know, the people who are his mentors are being badly treated, and he doesn't know, as like a child, he doesn't know what to think about that. Mm-hmm. But also, he comes out of nerddom. He's a computer programmer, but he acquired real-life experience working for Talos Corporation, being ferried around in the Middle East, and getting involved in an IED explosion and an attack. And that's what caused his PTSD, and since he was so essential to Talos, he then becomes a test subject for Mariposa, which is a huge profit-making potential here, because 300,000 war veterans have PTSD. If you have a treatment for PTSD that works, that's going to be extraordinarily profitable.
Well, I would invest in a painless tattoo removal operation. that'll make you a fortune. Let me talk a little bit about process. I mean, I've never spoken to you before. Thrillers are always plot heavy. Are you a relentless outliner? When you create a story, or when you create a novel, do you flowchart it? Do you get the story arc and fill in things later? Or you just sit down and wing it? How do you work?
I kind of know where I'm going to be going. I have key set points that I'm going to reach. I'm not entirely sure how I get there. So I think the process of a novel becomes more interesting if the plot doesn't stick, the bones of the plot don't stick out. So mine are more like cat bones. Mm-hmm. They come along more naturally, they're more supple, and they grow out more to the character interactions. And sometimes I'm quite surprised they work at all. But the characters bring it all together. It's what happens to them that makes a novel work.
When you were doing Quantico, did you know there would be a Mariposa?
No. I kind of thought that there might be something afterwards, but Quantico had a very mixed publishing experience, and so it was traumatizing. Got rejected by the publisher house that commissioned it, got bounced, thought my career was over, then it got picked up by Perseus, mm-hmm. and it became one of my best-selling hardcovers ever.
You know, you make me feel, you don't know anything about this, but you just made my day, because I can't get a book published, and I'm thinking, a little stunk like me, who really cares? If they can do it to you, they can do it to
absolutely.
Anybody.
Absolutely, and they did it almost deliberately and with malice from the editorial point of view, which is just extraordinary. It means mm-hmm. the editors were under extraordinary stress and needed PTSD treatment in their corporate situation. But yeah, and then they were all fired. Mm-hmm. And that happened with Darwin's Radio back in 1999. So it just happens far too often in my career to make any sense at all. Both of those books went on to become my favorites and my bestsellers.
So you mean that Patsy Cornwell and John Grisham may yet have a book rejected?
I don't think so. They may, in fact, be the reason the publishing companies can survive. Mm-hmm. It's quite often, I love these people because they can finance the rest of us, too.
What are you working on now? Are you somebody who doesn't like to talk about their latest project?
I'm working on a book whose title is still fluid, but it's a Starship novel.
Mm-hmm.
And
hard science fiction.
Well, pretty much. Yeah. But a Starship unlike anything we've seen before. This one's going to be really interesting. It's almost as if Philip K. Dick were writing a Starship novel. But
oh,
science fiction.
That's an awful big chunk to bite off.
Memory is at issue. Personality is at issue. Where you come from, why your ship is here, what's your role inside the ship. All that stuff.
Yeah, but Philip K. Dick, I mean, that's a huge pair of shoes you're trying to fill there.
Oh, I love Phil Dick's shoes.
Maybe you should start taking amphetamines. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's really been delightful talking to you. We have maybe a minute left. When you first started out, why science fiction? Why not, mainstream fiction or mystery novels? Or why science fiction?
Well, I blame comic books and Ray Harryhausen.
Excellent.
Because way back when I was 7 years old, in the Philippine Islands as a Navy brat, they showed 20 million miles to Earth in a kid's matinee. And that monster, the Emer, scared the hell out of me. And I had nightmares that night. I says, that's it. That's for me. That's cool.
Did you read Astounding Tales and If and Fantasy?
That didn't come along until the 60s for magazines, but I read a lot of books, Heinlein, of course, but Tom Swift and all the kids' books. And finally, around the late 1950s, started getting into science fiction. The Navy Station Library had a lot of these anthologies and so on, and I read a lot of the authors there, and I loved it. And the whole imaginative literature thing, the whole area of it, from horror to fantasy to science fiction, I'm there. I love it all.
Do you have a vampire book in the offing?
No, I had my ghost story.
Okay.
Deadlines and then City at the End of Time is so far in the future it's hard to tell what science fiction is.
Oh, like Last and First Men by Olaf Stapledon.
One of my influences. But also William Hope Hodgson, who was an Irish writer, who thought he was writing science fiction, like H.G. Wells, but he was a Celtic visionary. So there's nothing like his work on Earth. And the Nightland was kind of the bones underneath City at the End of Time.
Yeah, and I thought that James Joyce was the only Celtic figure.
He was.
It's been a thrill to talk to you. I'm really very happy to have met you. Greg Baer, the author of Mariposa and many, many books. Look him up online and read his work. It's published by Vanguard. Thanks very much for coming.
My pleasure. Thank you very much, Ed.